So, we were holding on the Mem Zayin of an Aleph on the top line at the two dots. So the Mishnah lists a number of examples of cases in which somebody is Mukhuyav Shvuah, can't take that Shvuah maybe because he was Mishpah L'Sheker, it says on the Shvuah, even on the Shvuah Shav, we talked about yesterday, the even and the difference between a Shvuah Shav and a Shvuah Sapikoda and a Shvuah Sa'edus. And then it starts giving other examples. It gives examples of the Masafik, the Kubia, and the Matriche Yona, the bird racing, and the gambling, and so on. What do we need this whole additional thing for? We got the message, and you don't have to tell me a whole list. I mean, certainly this is not the Mishnah that's coming to tell us the number of people that are various tsulim and so on. That's not our business. Our business here is simply to discuss what the halacha is of a mechuyav v'shvuah, and that can't be nishbat. So, sulamali, I mean, what's the point? Because, look, we're dealing over here with a takana that we made on someone who can't take a shvuah, you're right. So I might have thought that we only make that where the shvuah d'oraita has a d'oraita psul. In other words, the guy did something that prompted him for shvuah. He was nishba shvuah because of Yushek, that's a d'oraita. But the fact that a guy gambled, which is considered to be a gezela min rabbana, so that maybe wouldn't be considered to be the case, we should make it that kada after they talk that the guy did. Kamashmalan, the Mishnah now wants to tell us the psul d'rabbanan as well. So maybe it mentions this other clause, even though this isn't the Iker place, of course, where we have that, but that's fine. Hayushneim chashuvim. Then it says, if both of them, matter of fact, let's take a look in the Lashon of our Mishnah, because the Gemara is going to have a little bit of confusion of who says what. Hayushneim chashuvim chazra hashvua limkoma, diva Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Meir omer yachlok. So we had two shitas, and we don't even know exactly what it means to say that if neither of them could take the shvuah goes back to where it belongs. Now, what does that mean, to where it belongs? We'll have to clarify that. And we have another shita that says, yakloku, since that neither of them can swear, they split the amounts. But it isn't really clear, apparently, in the Girsa of the Mishnah, whether it was Rabbi Meir who said, yakloku, as we have it, and Rabbi Yossi who said, limikoma, or vice versa. And so Rava asked Rav Nachman, who of course was the Boki in the Dinim, and as a matter of fact, he was at his Bezdin, actually, the whole Dinim, which was Esed, which was Miskadesh, has a lot to do with the issues in our Mishnah, as we discussed yesterday. Kechitnan, how exactly did this Mishnah write it? Was it Rabbi Yossi who said it, Yachlokul, or was it Rabbi Meir who said Yachlokul, as we have it? Omar Le Lo Yadana, I have to tell you the truth, I don't know. I also was the top of two possible Gersos. Well, okay, but Hilchas Amai, I mean, what are we passing? Do we pass in Yachloku or Chazal Mekoma? Omar Le Lo Yadana, I don't know that either. Itmar, Omar of Yosef Bar Minyomi, Omar of Nachman. Now, Levice of Nachman is quoted, maybe this was after it was Mevurar, when that it's Rabbi Yossi who said Yachloku, not Rabbi Meir. The Chen Tani Rabbi Zvi Bar Oshia, in his gears it was Rabbi Yossi who said Yachloku. And Yikidi Amid, there's others that say that Tani Rabbi Zvi, Omar Rabbi Oshia, not only is it a question of Rabbi Yossi or Yachloku, but Omar Rabbi Yossi Bar Minyomi, Ovid Rabbi Nachman was the Yachloku. In fact, they actually saw Rav Nachman Paskin Lahalokha in his Bezdin, ultimately, Yachloku, which is, of course, the best Hilchasa that you can get. Because the Lamaisa, the Bezdin was Nayeg, that Yachloku in cases where neither can make a Shvua. So the Shita now turns out, Rabbi Meir apparently, is that Chazra Shvua Lemekoma, whatever that means, the Shvua goes back to where it belongs. Lahechan Chazra, where exactly does it go back to? What does this expression mean? Omer Rabbi Ami Rabotenu Shebabavel Amru Chazra Shvua L'Sinai. The meaning of this, according to our teachers in Babel, is that the Shvua pops back up to the Meta Shvua. What's the Meta Shvua? The Shvua that was made by Klal Yisrael Har Sinai. That they were mekabel all of the mitzvahs with the Shvua, the whole Natsa of Nishma. We understand the various Shvuas and the Brisos that were made on Har Sinai. And which means that in essence we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to establish justice in the world. That's the real meaning of it. L'maisa, we have lower level shruas and lower level dinim that are done by Beis Din on earth, but where we cannot exercise those dinim because we don't have the tools, such as in this case, where the correct tool that the Torah gave us was to make a shruah, and we can't. So we leave it in the hands of Hashem, and we don't do anything, because we don't know what to do, basically. And therefore, Beis Din essentially says, look, until we have further proof, there's nothing that we can do. So then they're not Moti Kesef, they're not Mechayev, things stay the way that they are. Which is just a fascinating idea, because, I mean, Lamaisa, you see that this comes up again and again in the Bris on Har Sinai. There was in Mishpatim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't worry about certain things. Ultimately, it's in my hands. In other words, so we have dinim, let's just double jeopardy. A guy goes out of Beis Din, you don't bring it back to Mibachai. But what do we do about justice? Ultimate justice isn't your concern anyway. I gave you certain tools. You use those. The tools don't work for you, and it appears to you that the justice isn't being done. Don't worry about justice. I'm the Lord. I take care of justice. When you were Makabal, it's Aaron Arsinai. That's the ultimate justice. As a matter of fact, the Zohar even says that that's why the Bris ends with Losev Asher Gedibach Aleivimo. Isn't that interesting? You'll notice every time that Bris, in Mishpatim, and then it's renewed in Kisiv, it always ends with that same pasuk, Losev Asher Gedibach Aleivimo. So it's like the craziest thing. It has nothing to do with anything. Losev Asher Gedibach Aleivimo, which doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything that we were talking about. That's the close. The last pasuk of the Bris is Lo Zav Asher Gedibach HaLevimo. The Zohar says the meaning of Lo Zav Asher Gedibach HaLevimo is not to confuse. There's two levels of reality. There's the source where things come from, and then there's that which you get to take out of it. Don't mix those two. There's a meta level of din, and then there's din. If you try to confuse it and you get involved in a crusade for justice, as opposed to doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you to do, then ultimately you destroy everything. So you follow this. Don't go out of the Gidrei HaTorah. And that's what they're saying is Chozer Shvuah LeSinai, which is a beautiful idea. Once the tools are removed from you, then you have to go back to HaSinai. And HaSinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. Lo Tikrasha. And he was the one that said, Lo Tikzol. You were Makabal. He said, Lo Tikzol, don't worry about it. He'll take care of it. To whom?
The gambling.
No, the gambling is only, it puts a person in a position where he can't take a shvuah because we don't trust him anymore. So therefore, we don't have the tools. Both of them are gamblers. We don't have the tools to make them swear because they're not suitable for swearing. So this is Rabba Seinu Shebababa. Rabba Seinu Sheberes Yisrael Amru, the meaning of Chazrala Mekolman means the Mishnah is not talking about Ruchmias going back to Sinai. It's saying that the mechanism of Shvuah was originally put on the person who is the Nidbar. Okay, so let him swear. If he can't swear, then he doesn't have the alternative and he'll have to pay. That's all. So when someone is Mekuyav Shvuah and the Torah said, let the owner take that Shvuah in lieu of the money, if you can't give him the Shvuah that's supposed to give it to him in lieu of his money, so don't let him pay. So even though you could say that the etzem we were misakin a shvuah had nightlin, but when the shvuah on nightlin doesn't work, let it go back and be in the hands of the one that it was meant to mini rights to be in the first place, and therefore let him swear. He can't swear, let him pay. So these are two completely different approaches. As far as identifying the shittas are concerned, it's not clear who these Rabba Seinu Shebababel are, who these Rabba Seinu Sheberes Yisrael are. Omer of Papa, I'll identify them for you. Rabotenu Shebabel is a reference to Rav and Shmuel, as I'll show you. And Rabotenu Sheberes Yisrael is a reference to Rabbi Abba. And the reason I say this is because we can identify the Piskei Halachas of Rav and Shmuel and Rav Abba in this issue. Namely, when it came to our Mishnah said, and this is a cute way of getting into the purity of our Mishnah, because this is really where we were up to anyway, this would be the fire from Mishnah. The mice of the girl learns that this is not really how it is that we know it's Rav and Shmuel at all. It's one of the, because Lamaisa, it doesn't necessarily prove anything. It's just that we know for a fact that Rabbi Shmuel was the one who said that it's Chazra L'Sinai. Because this particular case may be a case that everybody would be made, that the Bezdin doesn't have what to proceed on. But we'll talk about that. But let's take it now at face value. So at face value, it says in our Mishnah, V'chena Yisomim lo yifru ela b'shvua. Now, even if these are Yisomim, they will have to collect with a shvua. And of course, it's a very strange shvua, because what are they supposed to say? I mean, they can't say, we know for a fact that our father never collected this loan before and that you definitely owe them. How do they know? The most they can swear, as the Mishnah points out, is, look, I mean, we never heard anything, we never found anything in his papers that indicate that the shtar was paid up, and we're going on the basis of our best knowledge in this, that we're willing to swear to you, but we can't absolutely guarantee that you're not going to be paying this twice. All right, but that's the shvua that they'll have to swear. Now, we ask in the Mishnah, miman. When it says Yitomim have to make that shvua, have to make that shvua to whom? What does it mean? That the borrower? They're going to come to the borrower and they're going to have to swear that we never heard that. I mean, that's crazy. Their father himself, if he were alive, would he have to make such a shvua? Of course not. He takes a shtar. They could scream bloody murder. You collected this already. How could you do this to us? And I said, please, gentlemen, will you please just shut up and pay what it says here in the contract? I mean, nobody's interested in all of your moans and groans. Fine. So how is it possible to be Messiah the Yasson more than what the father himself would have had to do to collect it? The man died. He leaves a collectible star. And we're going to say, well, since you're Yasonim, you have less rights than your father. That's crazy. We never do that. If any, we always give you so many more rights. So it can't mean that. So they're going to need a shvua when their father didn't need a shvua. What it means is that in the same way that we said that someone who wants to collect from Yisomim needs to make a shvua, even Yisomim who are going to collect from Yisomim need to make a shvua, which you would think is crazy, because what can they swear after all? They don't really know all that much. But that's what we said. But at least they could swear that they don't know differently, that they didn't find anything in their father's papers to imply that it was already paid. That must be what it means. So Yitamim and Ayatamim and Lo Yifruela B'Shvua. Now so far this has nothing to do with our sugya. Ah, but Rav and Shmuel spoke about this understanding of the Mishnah, and what they said was like this. Rav and Shmuel D'Amar Tarvayu, this is only Lo Shanu Ela Shemait Malveh B'Chayei Loveh. Over here we're talking about a case where the father of the lender, in other words, died and left the shtar to his children. And then the borrower died. Because then the father, indeed, what would have been the halacha? The father was never chayev to make a shvua, because the father had a perfectly decent contract. So then, if that father dies, the borrower's father dies. Now, to protect the Yitomim, we ask these Yitomim, look, at least say you didn't know differently. But suppose it's the other way around. Suppose the borrower dies. Now, the lender's still alive. If the lender would have needed to collect this contract, we would have said, sir, I know you have a good contract, but after all, you're collecting from orphans, and we have a takanah, and anybody who collects from orphans has to guarantee with a shvua that he's collecting, knowing that this is a good shtar. So the father would have had to make a shvua. The problem is, now the father's dead. The children can't make that shvua. The most the children can say is, well, we never heard anything about it. But this loan had already been defined as a loan that is collectible only with a shvua that I know for a fact that it wasn't collected, because the father was still alive at that time. When he dies, he can only bequeath the rights that he has. The rights that he has was to collect this from the orphans of the borrower, with a shvua that said, I guarantee it was never collected. Can his orphans make such a shvua? Absolutely not. In that case, they're stuck.
Does
Chayim
have any kind of to do with it?
No, no, nothing at all. So, made loveh b'chayeh ha-malveh, kvar nitchayev malveh l'bnei loveh shvua. If, however, the borrower dies while the lender's still alive, So at the moment that he dies, the lender now could only collect with a full shvua, a guaranteed shvua. The ein adam morish shvua levana. A person cannot bequeath the shvua that he would have made to his children. How can the children honestly make a shvua on something that they don't know? I mean, what can they say? They could say, well, our father said, you can't bequeath what you say. So the money that he bequeathed them was money that is locked to them because they can't recover it with the shvua that he would have needed to make. So what do you see in this case? You see that since the father needed to make a shvua, that I never received this loan, and the children cannot make this shvua, which are, and therefore they become the equivalent of a mechuyav shvua she'eino yachol lishava. These children now need to make a shvua that they cannot make. And what does Rav and Shmuel say? It goes back to Har Sinai. The person can't act upon it. So therefore, you see that Rabotenu here at Sheba Bavel is in fact a reflection of the Shita of Rav and Shmuel. When you can't act upon a shvua, then Beis Din is essentially misaleket yadav and says that the good Lord will see to it that whoever is supposed to have things, he handles ultimate justice when you don't have the tools. Now, when we say rabbi, sorry, no, shuda dayani, no, they don't say shuda dayani in such a case. There's no elements of shuda over here. There's a fear that's out of our shuda dayani is where the issue, the initial issue, is innately undecidable. Over here, it's not innately undecidable. It's just somebody doesn't have the information that he needs. So now, Rabotenu Sheberetz Yisrael, I say that refers to Rav Abba. How do we know? Because you'll remember the case of Ahu Gavra, the Chotaf Natsa Mechavri. A guy goes, grabs something out of somebody's hands, a bar of silver, grabs it out of his hands. There's one witness that's there that he grabbed it. So the guy is screaming, drags him into court. He comes to Rav Ami in court. Now, Rav Abba was sitting there. He wasn't the dayan, but Rav Abba was sitting there. And he brings one witness that this guy indeed had grabbed it from him. The guy says, oh, you're darn right I grabbed it from him. Why, he stole it from me just last night. So I saw it in his hand, and it was clear to me that he had stolen it. I saw him coming out of my house with it, so I had an opportunity to recover it. I recovered it. So Reb Ami said, gee, please, what are you doing in a case like this? I don't know what to do. What's a poor judge supposed to do with a din like this? Can I tell the guy, pay for what you stole? Obviously not. I don't have two witnesses. How can I say on the basis of two witnesses? Can I say to him, listen, I'm sorry, keep what it is that you took. Can we say to the other guy, I'm sorry, we can't recover it for you. We have a witness. The witness would normally have been the chayav of the guy to make a shvua. That I don't owe it to you because we have a witness. One witness is Machai of a shvua. So we say to him, okay, so go make that shvua. Obviously, he can't make that shvua because the shvua that he was supposed to make was the shvua that it never happened. You say I grabbed it from him. I say I didn't grab it from him. I mean, that's exactly what the Torah would have demanded from this guy, correct? So he can't make that shvua. So the bottom line is that he is the equivalent of a gazlan on this. Not that he's really a gazlan, but in other words, in the same way that a gazlan would not have been able to swear on any other shvua. So when it comes to this shvua, he's in the same position as a gazlan who can't swear because he's agreeing that he took it, and he can't say, I took it, but it was my own because there's no such shvua. So it's not mechayev a shvua like that. It's only mechayev a shvua to be makhish the edus, but he's agreeing to the edus. So what are you supposed to do? No, if there's two witnesses, you'd have to pay it back. Because the fact that somebody claims that he stole his own thing does not give him any rights. It only gives him a right when he has a migul to say, what are you talking about? I never took it. So there he could say, I never took it. He could say, right? That's right, but he himself. That wouldn't matter. If 10 people saw it, we don't care what you say. We saw you steal something from someone. Possession is the definition of ownership, unless you can prove otherwise. So now, Reb Ami was stuffed. Comes along Reb Abba, and this is why we call Reb Abba Rabbeinu Sheberet Israel. Comes along Reb Abba, well, I'll tell you what the halacha is. This guy essentially needs to make a shvuah. But he can't make the shvuah because he's admitting that the aid is telling the truth. Therefore, he's a mechuyav shvuah ve'eino yachol leishavah, and he can't swear. V'chol ha'mechuyav shvuah ve'eino yachol leishavah mishalem. In fact, he would have to pay because he can't take the shvuah. Now, the truth is that there are many shittas of the Rishonim who hold that there isn't really a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel and Reb Ami in most cases. In other words, in a case where the guy can't make the shvua because of something that is ma'arer his taina, then actually Rav and Shmuel would also agree that, well, I'm sorry, then you'll have to pay. In other words, if he says, well, I don't remember. You don't remember? You have a taina shema? Tough. You need to make a shvua, buddy. If you're not sure whether you owe the money, then you're going to have to pay because you can't make the shvua. You see? But if the guy says, what do you mean? I would love to make a shvua. I'm telling you, I know exactly what's going on. I did take it. It's mine I took. Why can't you let me make a shvua? We say, well, I'm sorry, but we don't have a shvua like that. There we have a machlokas, you see. Or in the case of the yitomim. The yitomim say, well, I don't know, I mean, we know about 50, but we don't remember about, we only heard about $50, not about $100. So say, okay, so you're a motive of mixas? Well, they say, we're a motive of mixas. Okay, so swear about the other 50. So they say, well, how are we supposed to swear? I mean, our father never said anything. In a case like that, there's no reyes and the taina because they're not supposed to know. How are they supposed to know? So there is where the machlokas is, in which Rav and Shmuel says that there's no reason why the guy would have had to swear, would have had to know what to swear. So then, the best they can't act on it. If there's a reason for us to doubt him because he's not swearing, oh, then I agree that of course he's a Mechuyav Shvuah who can't use that thing that the Torah gave him as that mechanism, you see. This is how the Rambam simplifies it. So there's two levels in this. There's what's known over here as an Eino Yachol Leishavah, which is a taina that is a tova. There's a good reason why he can't swear. There's no reason why we would have thought he'd be able to swear, like in this case. And the Iker Machlokas is only about this case, where Rami says, even so, wherever that was the thing that the Balan had to take, and you can't give it to him, because Rosh Rala Mikoma, and you're in the unfortunate position of having to pay. If you should have known, you shouldn't have known. That's not the point. There we have a Machlokas. The Torah was Mechayev Shvuah in this case. It's the Torah that told us that you don't say Amot Simecha Ve'ol Avaraya in such a case. Because there's one hit. No, that's not called Mutzak. Because now we have the guy who's being Modi took it from somebody else. He's not a Mutzak. And as Rav Abba points out, I mean, we have a witness that says that the other guy was Mutzak. That's not called Mutzak. Actually, that's one of the cases where somebody's willing to pay. Well, not Rava. Kavas Rav Abba Nistava. Says Rava, you know, what Rav Abba is saying makes a lot of sense because the Tani Rabbi Ami, and some learn actually that this was the basis. This is what Rav Abba says, not just that it makes sense, but it was the basis of Rav Abba. Rav Ami learns in a brighter like this. It says, Shvuat Hashem tiyeh bein shnehem. Why does it have to say bein shnehem? It said already, Belakach Ba'alav, I mean, bein shnehem between the two of them. I mean, obviously between the two of them. I mean, who else is involved? But the point, bein shnehem, is to teach us that only between them is there a shvuah. But when it comes to the Yorshim, the Torah did not give us the option of a shvuah. Now, what is that talking about? Hechidah. Let's imagine the case over here. Elaima Biyamale, let's say an orphan comes to another orphan and says, I know that my father lent your father $100. And the other guy says, no, I know from my father that he borrowed $50, not $100. I know this for a fact. So then the difference between them at this point really has nothing to do with the father. It has to do with them. So who cares that it happened to be the father? They say they were there. They know what happened. So they're arguing like anybody else is arguing. So Mali Hu, Mali Avua, what's the difference? So now the Tzviya is between the two of them. And what do we care where the Tzviya came from? Elalav, the case has got to be where one of them says, you know, my dad lent your father $100 before he died. And the other one says, gee, it could be, but I don't know. I know my father mentioned $50 of it. I don't know about another 50. Lawyer done, I just don't know. Now, if that's the case, and we're saying that Shvurat Hashem Tiyah Ben Shnehem, but there's no din of a Shvua in this case, okay, what are the implications of making such a din in the Torah? The implications are that there's going to be a significant difference between the father had he been alive in this case, or the children when the father is not alive. So let's analyze what that difference would be, okay? If you're going to tell me that Rabbi Abba is right, and that the father in such a case, when the father says, well, I can't really remember, I only remember $50. I can't say 100% that there's not another $50, but on the other hand, I don't remember anything about it. Can he swear that it was only $50? Of course not. He's like, I just don't remember, I only remember $50. And there you're going to say, okay, so if Rabbi Abba is right, since he cannot make that shvuah, because he can't say, I don't know, it was a shvuah, you have to say, I know that what you're saying is wrong. So he'll have to pay. So there comes along the third to say, yes, he'll have to pay. But a yoresh will not have to pay under those circumstances because we don't say shvuat Hashem, ki yebein hayorshin. And therefore we were never mechai of you in such a case to make a shvuah, because after all, how are you expected to know? And since we're not expecting you to know, then we're not going to make you pay either. Huh? So then it makes a great deal of sense. The Torah makes a distinction between the father and the child. But if you hold a Rav Shmuel, that when you don't know something, all we say is not that somebody's got to pay, we just say the court can't act on it. Because now it goes back to Har Sinai, and basically Har Sinai was an acceptance that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges in the world, he'll take care of. Wherever Besdin isn't given the tools to deal with it, Besdin's not meant to deal with it. You don't use artificial tools to deal with something. Okay? So if that's the case, then that would have been true of the father too. So what's the difference? You're saying, according to Rav Shmuel, the father says, gee, I don't know, I can't make the shvuah. So we say, all right, well, you can't make a shvuah, there's nothing we can do about it, right? Okay, there's nothing you can do about it, fine. Now the father's dead. The Yoresh says, well, I can't make the shvuah, I don't know. Said, yep, okay, there's nothing we can do about it. So I don't need a puzzle to say that. I would have said the same thing to the father. So what's the difference between Bein Shnehen or Bein the Yorshim, you see? Therefore, what the Torah must be saying is, teaching us Rav Abba's halacha, essentially. That there's a big difference. Because if the father said, I can't swear because I don't know, he's going to have to pay. But if the child says, I can't swear because I don't know, he's not going to have to pay. Now, does that make a difference? Absolutely.
From the Shnei Am.
Only them and not their Yorshim. So let's just see that insight. If you're going to tell me that dad in this situation would have had to pay, as Rav Abba said, so then, of course, it's Zuchralim if they're got the Yorshim. Then we need a plus to tell me, but the child in the equivalent case does not have to pay. Eliyamrit, Avivki Hagav the Nami Patur. If you're going to tell me, as Rav and Shmuel insisted, but dad also wouldn't have had to pay, because the Shmuel would have gone back to Har Sinai and whatever God would have worked out during the course of their lives and their mutual business dealings or whatever, somehow or other the money would get to where it belongs. So then, but he's Patur to pay. So then why do I need a puzzle to tell me that the Yorshim are puzzle to pay? Even the father would have been puzzle to pay. So Kragaba Yorshim Lamali. That's a very good riot to Rav Abba. Indeed, it says the Gemara, what do Rav and Shmuel do with that? That's a fantastic riot. What's the point of saying Shvuas Hashem Tiyah Ben Shnehem? So what does Rav and Shmuel do with I Shvuas Hashem Tiyah Ben Shnehem Maikadar Shibet? What do they use the pasuk for? Ah, they use the pasuk for the same thing that we use it earlier in the Masechta, where we had that whole thing about terrifying scene of taking a shvuah at the Yonim and Bezdin, and how everybody says Suruna Me'ale Anashim Haraim, and everybody's scaring the heck out of them for making a shvuah. And we said, what did the guy do? I mean, he didn't do anything. He's just trying to recover his money. And we brought this drasha. L'kiratani Shimon ben Tarfon Omer Shvuat Hashem Tiyah Ben Shnehem. Both people are ultimately responsible for this. And we had a number of different pirushim, if you recall then, that the child both are responsible because this individual should never have gotten involved with the person that was going to bring into a case where he had to go into bed and recover his money. Why was he such a sucker? Why wasn't he more careful in the first place to be need to use this kind of thing? Or there was another pshat, yeah, ben shnehem, that it's like the Voldemort, Harry Potter wands being linked, you know. So there's a linkage over here between the two of them. Somebody's going to get hurt. There's no way that you can get away without being hurt on this. And so on. Okay, we have the Ksam Sofer we spoke about, or the Minhag, not to take shuas because of this, all of those different elements. We talked about the shuva of Reb Moshe and the psak of Reb Shlomo Zalman about whether you have to worry about a doctor writing a shuva. All these, remember, we had a whole nice discussion about it. But in any event, that was that Rasha. Shuas Tem Tiyah Ben Shneim, it affects both of you. You're both involved in it. That's all that it means to say. It doesn't mean to tell me Ben Shneihem, but not between the Yorshim. That's not the point. By the way, once we mention already Shimon Ben Tarfon's drushes, I mean, there's a good place to mention his other drushes. Shimon Ben Tarfon Omer, another drush that Shimon Ben Tarfon said, was Azar Alo Okev Akar Noev Minai. You know that a lot of internet companies have an OKAVE program, right? So they follow you around on the internet, right? So they know where you're going. What do you call those? Like spyware programs, right? So you leave a trace. OKAVE is you leave footprints. So those footprints that you leave on the internet, there's companies that look at those footprints and say, okay, this is the kind of guy that likes to buy pornographic literature. This is the type of guy that likes to get involved in this type of chat room or whatever, right? So then they start sending you mail about that and everything. Now, how do you know that if you know somebody is into pornography, you should not put in a program in the computer to trace it and then send him more pornographic opportunities? So let's say somebody is soliciting sex on the internet. How do you know that you should not get involved in providing him a service based on his needs?
Why is that not over Lifnei Iver?
Because Lifnei Iver is only Trey Avri the not. As if he could get it anywhere, so you just want in on the money, so you're going to put your program there for him, right?
If this was something other than pornography, like they were talking about buying...
No, we're not. Well, that's not what it's talking about. It's talking Badaska about pornography, as we'll see. So how do we know it? Tabaloma lo sin af, which can be read as lo san if. Don't cause other people to be put into a position of ni'ifa. So even though maybe mitzad the ikr dinov on the halakhic ni'iver, maybe it wouldn't apply here, but don't be you be the one to provide such a service. Another beautiful drasha that Rav Shimon ben Tarfon said is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or Moshe Rabbeinu, talks about how terrible our response was to the miraglim. So it says over there a funny word, vateiragnu ba'alechem, and then you said, b'sinat Hashem otanu otziyanu mi'aretz Mitzrayim, vateiragnu otanu b'yarei Amori la'shvidenu. Terrible things that you said. You took what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for you out of love, and you turned it into hate. So what's the pshat vateiragnu ba'alechem? First of all, it isn't even true. I mean, nobody was ba'alechem. They were all out. They were out, and they were crying, and they were... The response is a public response. But Alechem sounds like it was only in the Ohel.
What is this? The part of the source?
Oh, so he's... Well, we use it nowadays because of this prophet as murmurings and Lashon Hara and rumor mongering and so on. But this is the marker of it. And what does that word really mean? Says Shimon ben Tarfon, it's a combined word from the word tartem viganitem. In other words, you ran around looking to cheapen it. So you were vateiragnu, you were tartem, and then you were meganet. You put something down after you looked for it, and what was it? O'alo shel makom that you did this to. So o'alechem doesn't mean in your personal tense. It means, the Rimigash says it means Eretz Yisrael, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ultimate ohel. And even Rashi, I mean, there's some confusion as to what the correct gear says in Rashi here, but Rashi over here says also that lashon of o'alechem. Again, as I say, it isn't clear. He says, "Es hamokim shehishkin et shinato b'neichem." So you can learn that es hamokim is a reference to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So v'nitem and o'alechem is sort of a nice way of saying Hakadosh Baruch Hu himself. And why do we call him o'alechem? Because he was mashkin the o'amoed b'neichem, which is how some understand Rashi. Or it can mean the pashtus, that you were Magana, the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mashkin the Shechina, which means Eretz Yisrael, which is the way the Rimigash learns before Rashi, but that's called the Oyel HaMokan.
So we find the Eretz Yisrael referred to HaKadosh Baruch Hu all anyway?
We'll refer, well, Admato, can't think of where we first found Mishnah Oil. But this is a beautiful Mevetz of Chayim. You read the Gash, it's a pretty good hooker for it. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Another famous, this is a famous drasha, which Rashi brings in his Pirush on Chumash. Adah Nahar HaGadol Nahar Prat. Now, it's very strange, because the Nahar HaGadol Nahar Prat is obviously the smallest of the four rivers, because it's listed last. So why would we call it a Nahar HaGadol? So it says, and what's the pshat of Nahar HaGadol? Shimon ben Tarfon Omer, that's because it is the Gvul of Eretz Yisrael. And you know what people say. Rav Lagabi Dahina Vidhan. If you get close to somebody who is Mashuach B'Shemim, in other words, somebody who is important, and some of that oil will rub off on you, and you too will be Mashuach. And here too, you have a great place, which is all Eretz Yisrael. If you are the Gvul of Eretz Yisrael, that makes you a great river. People may not see that you're a great river. You may look like a little stream to them, but you are a great river. I think it's the Chiddush Arim that says that the people who live in Eretz Yisrael have to understand this as well. It may look like all the money and all the chashivas and all the fancy things in a chutz l'aretz, but that's just, they look like great rivers, but the great people and the great things are all in Eretz Yisrael, and that's the Torah for Gabi
Dehina. Do you remember my driver in Kenya, Samuel?
Yes.
One day he spoke to a friend who's driving a Mercedes around, and I had this little car, and the guy was
Steve Mishana,
his car's
live,
and
right.
What I'm driving.
Ooh. That's amazing. That's beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. So I remember the story, actually. So that's the point over here. The Vei Rebbe Yishmael Tana, in the Braisa, we learn, it's said slightly different, that Eved Melech Kemelech, someone who is Mishamesh the king, Nahar Parat is Mishamesh Eretz Yisrael, it becomes like the king. You treat a prime minister like a king because he has the chashivas of the king. Now the next case that we had...
No,
right, we'll be there soon enough. Achenvani al Pinkaso. Tanya Omar Revi. It's interesting that Revi has reported in a Braisa to be unsure of his own mission. So he said, I don't really know. Tarach Shvua Zulama, I'm not sure about this whole thing. Both of them come to Bezdin, and there's going to be a false Shvua. What's it all about? Now, he didn't explain at that point. So what's the alternative? I mean, the alternative, yes, we have, like Benana says in the Mishnah, that you could take without a Shvua, because why should we beg two people make a Shvua? Or maybe he holds with the Poalim can swear that the Balabais, I mean, that the Skenvini never gave it to them, and if he was too stupid to have witnesses there, he should have known he was going to get into trouble, and he should lose. It's not clear what Rebbe's doubt was. Now, at that point, the Talmidim told Rebbe, I'm going to Rebbe here, it's too late for you to have doubts. It's only a Mishnah before us, Rebbe. I mean, you got to stick with the Mishnah. Tanina, Shneem, Nishboim, Venash, and the Balabais. I mean, that's what it says in the Mishnah. Kiblamine or lo kiblamine. Did Rebbe accept this? That, okay, fine, I give in, that's it. Or, well, I mean, remember that the Mishnayos, it's not that Rebbe made up Mishnayos. I mean, Rebbe, the Pshat is this is the collection of Mamorim. I mean, the fact that, it would be Rebbe Meir's Maimer, and he would have it in his collection, but we used the Chazar over, and we had Mishnah Rishayna, Mishnah Hureyna. Okay. Was he Makabal this halacha l'maaseh or not? Well, I don't know. There's a Bryce that sure seems to imply that he didn't, because Shema Tanya Rebbe Omer Poalim Nishbaim L'Chemzani. In the Bryce it says that the workers have to swear to the Chemzani. Now, and the whole point of the Mishnah is that the workers have to swear to the Balabayas, because the Chemzani basically could say, listen, I don't know you guys, I'm not interested in your Shuas. I just want my money. I mean, forget it. And if that's the case, if they swear to the Chenveni, it would mean that the Chenveni loses. And if the Mishnah was right and Rebbe had accepted from Reb Chiya that that's how he should stick, then he should have said that the Poalim are Nishbaim Lebalabayit. So why did he mention the Chenveni? So, Imita Lebalabayit Mibayilet, says Rava, well, I mean, there's another way of interpreting that, right? I mean, it will all be that Rebbe stuck to the pshat that he mentions in the Mishnah. And what he's saying over here is a big chiddush. That when the Poalim swear to the Balabayit, the Chenveni is standing there in front of them, and they have to swear in his face that he never gave it to us. So at least there should be an embarrassment at needing, I mean, like this, they could say, yeah, I'll say whatever they want to the Balabayit. I mean, he's not there. We involve him in the case and force them to the Azus Ponim that they should have to say in front of him. So it means that may all be all that it means, that they should have to face him And of course, we do that often. We bring in somebody that they have to face and see, okay, what are you going to do to the guy's face? Itma. Shteit te'edim. Makrishot zo etze. How about we have a case where you have two witnesses and they contradict each other. And here we have a case in which we have two shvuas contradicting each other. Somebody is definitely lying, right? And in a case where we have two groups of witnesses, two against two, somebody is definitely lying. And what is the status of those people after they definitely lied? I mean, this is what Benanis is timing. I mean, what are we doing? We're creating a situation in which somebody is going to possibly himself in court. It seems to be a very strange thing to do. So Lamaisa, when we have two Kitei, one of them is lying. We have an important machlokas as to what their status is from that point on. Omer Avuna, neither of them are puzzled, as long as they don't appear together. Because each one maintains a cheskas, kashrus, zoba'a b'tnei atzmo me'ida, zoba'a b'tnei atzmo me'ida, each one can testify to their own eid. As long as they don't have, obviously, you take one from one cot and one from the other cot and sign them on a contract, you're not being too smart. Because then you can puzzle them by saying, look, one of these guys is definitely not kosher le'edus, he's lied in court, he's perjured himself. Rav Chisda says that. No, neither of them can ever be believed again, because Bahari Sahari Shakre Lamali. Why would we want to take into court someone who has even been put into this situation of perjury? He's involved in a case, and it's possible that he's the one that has perjured us. How, when we rely on testimony, we have to rely on something absolute, on something positive. We can't rely on chazakas. That was the whole point of testimony. So this guy, we now have to doubt. How can we bring in an aid that the person will say, you mean you're going to make me pay money on the basis of someone that you know is 50% maybe of perjury? Is that crazy? Is that fair? Well, it's very similar to Shvuas Hashem Tiyeh Bein Shneihem. You both get busted. It's not his fault. You're right. You're 100% right. Sometimes things are not fair. It's just the way things are. There's nothing that we can do, unfortunately, to establish ultimate justice in the world. We're stuck with imperfect tools in an imperfect world. So now, let's analyze what the real implication would be to contract now, okay, based on the yeshivas. Now, if you've got a case in which you've got shnei malvim v'shnei lovim, there's two lenders, two borrowers, two separate shtarot, they come into court, and the court said, isn't that interesting? There's each one is signed with a set of eidos that seems to be okay, but that had once been in court together, and one of them were perjurers. Well, we know one of them definitely lied. But according to Ravuna, they can each come in separately. According to Rav Chisda, no. These guys throw them out. So now, of course, Heinuch Luxayu. That's where the Machlokas would be. The Dayanim would see these two contracts. They would say, according to Rav Chisda, they'd say, gentlemen, we're terribly sorry, but neither of you are going to collect on the basis of this contract because we've got a problem with your testimony here. According to Ravuna, we say to both of them, well, you know, you both have valid contracts. No problem. Even though we know, you know, one of them isn't, but we have to proceed on the basis of the chazaka that these are eidos, that is okay. How about in a case where you have a malva and a lova, it's the same malva, the same lova, and you've got two shtarot. Now, according to Chisda, obviously it doesn't matter. We throw it out anyway. But according to Ravuna, now, Ravuna in this case has got a problem because Ravuna also agrees you can't have both of them being right. And over here, the same guy wants to collect from the same guy with two separate contracts, one of which is certainly not kosher. What does he do? Well, in that case, Yad Baal Hashtar ala Tachtona. Obviously, he can only collect the lesser of the two shtarot because of each one, the guy that looks at me. I mean, Joe, you know that this is not a good one of these contracts isn't good now.
And one of them is good?
One of them is good.
You sure?
According to Ravuna.
Well, I understand, but we don't, it's not automatic suspicion that...
Well, that was what Rav Chisda said. Ravuna said the guy had a cheskes kashrus. It's fine. You can't have a contradictory cheskes kashrus if they're both coming at the same time. So, you know, the most you can do is you can claim that the least of the two contracts, the lesser of the two contracts, is what I owe you, and I'm ready to pay you for that, because whichever one is kosher.
Is it in both contracts? That
because
amount?
One... Because yes, because that amount... In other words, if one is for 200 and one is for 100, then they both are for 100 minimum. So I'll pay you the 100.
One of them is false.
Right. I'm not collecting on the basis of false ones. He doesn't have a false contract. He has witnesses that aren't kosher because they once perjured themselves. Contract isn't false. Just because somebody once perjured himself doesn't mean everything he signs on is false. Fine, no? So one of these contracts the court won't accept because they don't trust the witnesses, not because they have any doubt that they don't think he's lying. It's just that he doesn't have a kosher contract, right? That's all.
These contracts signed by the same agent?
No. One is signed by Cot 1 and one is signed by Cot 2. That's the point. So one of them is kosher, one of them is not kosher. Not one of them is a lie. It's the same lender. Yeah, one year, one another year. What's the problem? I lent you $100 this year, and I lent you $200 last year. Last year, these two guys were there, and they signed for me. This year, these two guys were there, right? Now, little did I know that they had both been in court together. I didn't know that. If I would have known that, I would have just gotten somebody else and gotten out of the... I didn't know that, so I had them sign. Come on, George, you didn't know that either. I mean, we all went on, the best available at the time, as you know. So there, we paid a lesser of the two shtarot. Fine. Again, according to Rav Chisda, we throw it out because Bahadei Edishak, Sadishak, Rilomun. In a case where you would have two different lenders, okay, and one borrower, and you've got two separate shtarot. Now, there, we've got an interesting situation because then that would be essentially the equivalent of the case in our Mishnah. Hainu Matnitin. We have there the case that we had in our Mishnah, where you have two, basically, lenders, and they come along now, and each one is signing the same thing, and now we have both people in our Mishnah swearing and taking from the poor Balabayit, even though we know, of course, there's no way that this Balabayit really owes both of them. I mean, they're taking advantage of him. And it's what we're doing over here. We're saying, look, one of them is definitely false in the sense that it's not a kosher shtar, right? And one of them is definitely false. But what are we supposed to do? We can't be mafsid either of these lenders. It's not their fault. Both lenders have a shtar that they're bringing separately, separate kitei eidim. It's exactly the case in our Mishnah when both groups, the Bala Chenveni and the Poalim, are suing the Bala Bayit for their money. We can't turn either party aside just because the poor Balabayas is going to get messed up by this, and we know he's getting messed up. There's no way that he owes both of these people. And yet you see the yesod of our mission is we have no choice but to follow through with the very, very inappropriate, poor judgment that's going to happen to this Balabayas is going to end up paying twice for the same thing when we know he's not supposed to pay twice, but we have to follow the law. And the law is that he owes these Poalim and that he owes this Chenveni. And it's just, what can we do? We have no way of finding out the truth. Each one has a valid taina against him. Now, here too, there's two lenders. What are we going to say? We're going to say to lender one, well, why don't you just forget about it? The other guy's star may be good. And he'll say, well, why doesn't he forget about it? Maybe his star isn't good. So both of them are going to come. They're both going to be able to collect, even though we know that we're collecting illegally from this poor guy who borrowed, and somebody's got a star that's not reliable. Too bad. Exactly what happens in our Mishnah.
Is it the same as one of you, but I don't know
which one? Well, over there it's different because there obviously is the issue of him being Messiah himself based on this. There you get into a question of Tika. Yeah, right. He can't. So he's claiming he doesn't. Right? Now, we're collecting based on a shtar. I mean, the Balabayas can maybe owes two people also, in a sense. Although the truth is that there is a lot of discussion about the differences between these two. And it's based on how Rishonim say to deal with, so what do we do? Because the differences between these two is that in this case, both can be right. In the other case, one definitely isn't right. So the question that we have is, suppose you've got two borrowers and one lender and two shtarot. What do we do in that case? It was Rav Huna who claims that there's definitely a kosher pair of Aiden over here. What is he going to do with the question of the two borrowers, right? Because do we say that, well, we'll have to say that, look, there's nothing we can do. Yeah, I mean, he's bringing a star. One of these stars is no good. How can we use it? Or do we say, look, I mean, each one separately stands, as Rav Huna said, And after all, it's not against the same person, so there's no contradiction. They both could stand. How do we look at it from the point of view of Rav Huna? That's a question. My. And that question, indeed, Taker, we're not sure about what we would do. In this case, obviously, Rav Chisda is not part of any of this, except for that very first case where we said, Hainu Fluktayim. That's the Machlokas. We've only been asking, what's the din? I'll leave it to Rav Huna. According to Rav Chisda, for sure. I mean, all of this we throw out because these are Sahadi Shakrim.